Welcome to Compassion Radio 360. Morning, honey. It's time for Compassion Radio's 360 program. We end the week looking at something that's real in the world and then kind of break it down to see if there's anything spiritual underlying any of this news we read about.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
We're going to take on a wild article I read, and it's a real condition, medically speaking, that someone has started documenting and people are actually researching aggressively to find out what's really behind it. Is there any way to help those who are suffering from this? I'll let you introduce the article here and then we'll riff from there.
I got to be honest, when you first sent me this article, I thought, I don't have any idea how we're going to use this for Compassion Radio 360. But the more we talked about it, the more I thought, well, yeah, I could see some things that we could come up with that would turn us back to the way God maybe looks at things rather than the way man looks at things.
Yeah, that's the whole objective of the series anyway, is to say, is there a way that God sees these things that may not be the way we do? And if so, how do we get back on his wavelength? The person that's at the center of this article had a very interesting medical condition. If I've got this right, you would pronounce it this way, prosopometamorphopsia. Weird word.
Yeah.
It has to do with the brain transfiguring what you see into grotesque images, but only about faces.
Yeah.
I remember in psychology class when I was back in high school talking about the perceptions of faces as a unique brain thing that's different than the way we see everything else. Mm-hmm. The way we perceive people. And know that it's a person, and know that the face in front of us belongs to a person that would be able to communicate with us, is something that is so deeply embedded in the way our brain structure is built that we do not have the same parts of our brain firing when I look at a person's face versus when I look at a picture of something or a painting of a face. I think that's fascinating to start with.
Yeah.
This condition, we'll call it PMO from now on because that's the abbreviation they're using in the article. I think it would be a devastating thing to experience, and then just as devastating to find out that there's no cure for this. What they have done is research what's causing it and helping to retrain people's brains a bit. But the article title is, "It's Like Staring at Demons. Meet a Man Who Lives with a Disturbing Condition."
It would be one of those things that would creep up on you suddenly. And when it did, it would probably be pretty terrifying because this man talks about how he's just sitting in his apartment, in walks his roommate. He looks at his roommate's face and sees that it is really distorted, almost like a goblin look to his face. And then his roommate turned and his ears were pointed and all of these strange things. And he thought, what's happening here? First, I think he thought that his roommate was playing a trick on him. And then it didn't stop. And then the roommate's girlfriend comes in the room and her face looks the same. He begins to try to describe it to them and they just look at him and say, "You're nuts. Yeah. I mean, you're crazy."
Our first take on that, if we had heard the story, would be, well, what kind of drugs is he taking?
Mm-hmm.
And there was lots of hallucinogens that are still being used recreationally around the world that will distort all kinds of perceptions. It is interesting that this particular perception problem is, again, only about faces. Now, people who've taken lots of drugs may have problems seeing people's faces too, but they see all kinds of other weird things around everything else, about the entire universe. And what they found out is the particular parts of the brain that are focused on faces, that interpret faces, there's a lesion or some kind of damage that's happened to their brain in that little tiny spot of the brain that does such an incredibly important function, like a mother being able to recognize her baby, vice versa. There's something about this that is key to what it means to be human, I think, and to understand what other humans are, what they're like, and how we fit in.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the devastating discovery to find out I've got damage to my brain that's affecting this. But it's an important truth to discover that I have a problem here. And we know what the problem is. Fixing it may not be possible, but adapting to it or changing our perceptions of what our brain itself is doing might be possible.
Yeah. Well, honey, you talked about that after your stroke, how you had to literally tell your brain, this is what's happening. What I think is happening, what I'm perceiving somewhere in my brain is not real. You talked about feeling like the whole left side of your body had disappeared, that it wasn't even there. And you had to tell your brain, it is there. That part of my body is there. I'm going to believe that it's there, even though I don't think it's there.
By faith, I had to believe that what you and what the doctors, what my therapists were telling me was in fact true. And it would have to be a truth that I had to accept before I could experience it. They literally told me, until you believe it's there, it's not going to reappear to you. Mm-hmm. It will never come back. you have to choose to let it be.
Yeah.
And I did. I made that choice to say, okay, my wife would not lie to me. I can trust these people. They're good people. They're not trying to pull one over on me. And I know something's not there. It's not right. So I have to choose to believe what you said, even though it made no sense to me at all, because I couldn't perceive any of that person on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I did choose. I could start to do things even before I understood it was me doing them. I had to believe that there was another thing out there called my left arm. My left arm could do things.
Right.
And that left arm could catch a ball, could throw something. And suddenly it started being able to do that before I was even aware it was doing it. Mm-hmm. So that was my therapy to come back into myself. Many, many other people who've had brain injuries like I did have experienced something similar.
Yeah, you have to decide a lot about your daily life.
Yeah.
And I think that's true for all of us, whether you have a severe traumatic brain injury or you have some condition that has altered your brain in another way, like this gentleman with the PMO. Or you just have a certain set of beliefs that have altered your way of thinking or that have shaped your way of thinking. We have to be open to the perspective of another person that says to us, this is the reality of what's there, and be willing to go down that road, willing suspension of disbelief in some ways.
Then you get this catch 22. Is this person trustworthy? How do I know this person can lead me right? And that's where the real conundrum is. How do we know not just what's true, but who will tell us the truth? That's a real problem in the world today. We look at what we see on social media and even on television now and think, I'm not even certain if that picture I'm seeing is a real representation of what's there.
Oh, yeah.
We enjoy that in the movies. We have a willing suspension of disbelief to go enjoy the monsters on screen or something futuristic. The green screen takes over the universe and we buy into it because we know it's not real to start with. But it's getting harder and harder to suss that out. How much of this was actually created in the studio and in a computer in someone's imagination before it ever appeared on screen? And how much of it is really real people that are relating to these things and creating the story and telling us a bigger narrative? If you can't trust the thing right in front of your nose, can you trust anything? And that's the problem we've got. Which leads us, I think, to the transition into the spiritual lesson here. Not just how we perceive and whether or not our brains are damaged, but can we not have a corollary in explaining the problems we have in understanding truth by saying, you know, our souls have damage. The question is really where? Where did we suffer damage? Now, if you look at children in war zones, like the children in Gaza now, that are experiencing heavy PTSD, any sharp noise, whatever, just sets them off into a shaking fit. And that is very normal across the experience of war all across the world, across history, because the brain has now been so trained that the next thing that comes might be your death. The adrenaline response just sends the body into a total shake. They can't stop it. It is not because the body itself is broken, but the mind's perception of what that input means triggers so many other things that just are not so in the room where they sit.
We also see that in people who've come out of cultic situations.
Yes.
People who grow up in a very fundamental cult that are—
with a very rigid structure of some kind.
Rigid structure that have so many rules and things that you have to do to follow, to be right with God, or to make sure that the leader of this group is happy with you.
And all the things you are taught must be true in the world around you for our truth to be true.
Exactly.
So they get fed a lot of lies about everybody outside the room, anybody outside that clique.
And it's also true for someone like me who grew up in a very small town and had no idea of a lot of things going on in the world around her. Very sheltered life. At some point, going out into the world as a young girl, I mean, I remember going on a missions trip, basically, with my parents to Wisconsin, of all places, from Texas. And I was like, a completely different world, you know?
Yeah.
And we drove through St. Louis, Missouri, and that was bigger than Austin, where I grew up close to. And my perception of the world was shifted at, you know, 12, 13 years old, in a way that I never thought possible. Since then, I've traveled a lot and I've seen a lot of the world and know that there is huge differences all around the world. But some people don't ever get that opportunity and they're set in their ways, they're settled in what they believe is to be true about the world around them without having traveled very far.
You've heard the phrase, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
We say that a lot because we're looking for a reason to change our mind or to keep from changing our
mind.
The opposite is really true. What I believe is what I will see. And that is, I think, fundamentally true for things as simple as what the world is like around you and what eternal things are like, what they're actually made of. What is the substance of things I can't see, as Paul talks about?
Yeah. So what happens when our perspective is so rigid and so set that we don't allow ourselves to be open to what God's perspective might be on something?
Whether getting Bibles into closed countries, relief supplies into dangerous refugee camps, or providing training in theology books to barefoot pastors as they begin their ministry, these are all the kind of things that we love to share with you every day. And more importantly, they're the kind of things we like to do. Will you help us get ready for the next big faith challenges and opportunities of this year? Your gift today will provide the means for us to begin some new initiatives with our Bible and relief partners that reach farther than we've ever gone before. Here's how. The first and best way to reach us is through our website, CompassionRadio.com. It's available 24/7. Our Safe and Secure order form there will get your gift to the places needed most, and we'll do it right away. You can also support us with a call during Pacific Time business hours at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. You can also text COMPASSION to 53445 to give right through your phone, no matter where you are.
And note our new mailing address, which is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. Again, that's Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877.
However you give, we'd love to hear more about why you believe in Compassion Radio. We so much value your messages and letters. And know this, your gift is deeply appreciated. Thank you for loving us in this way.
What is the substance of things I can't see, as Paul talks about?
Yeah. So what happens when our perspective is so rigid and so set that we don't allow ourselves to be open to what God's perspective might be on something?
When we see threats around us, we're not likely to yield to another thought. We circle the wagon, so to speak, and withdraw into the things we feel safe with. Mm-hmm. Not that the things that we've experienced are necessarily safe, because there's lots of trauma that goes on with things like you talk about cultic beliefs. People may not want to stay there, but when they face something different that's foreign to them, that seems completely out of normal or a threat to our well-being, their intentions for us may not be the best. When you face a situation like that, you're going to withdraw to what is familiar, whether it's healthy or not.
Right. Well, change is very hard, period.
So you're going to fall to the place where you have believed before. How do we ever even come across that threshold and enter into the kingdom of God? Well, we are led there somehow. We are introduced somehow. We are encountering something different than we've ever encountered before. And something breaks through to convince us that this is a bigger reality. I don't get it all yet, but there's something going on here that has moved something else in me than just what I'm seeing with my eyes. It goes to the seeing of the heart, we say. The soul interacts with something that it has never been pinged with before. It feels something it's never felt before. It encounters something it has never thought possible before. Mm-hmm. That is where the real faith begins, because we encounter something. But then we also make a choice, right? We choose to follow this way to discover what it has for us. And we go walk that way.
You know, I was thinking of ways to kind of reshape your mind or to regear your mind, to even have a litmus test for me. Am I getting into this mode of seeing things in a skewed way? Just popped into my mind to think about the fruit of the Spirit. When I look at this thing, what fruit of the Spirit is prevalent here in me? Is there any? Am I thinking anxious thoughts? Am I angry? Am I fearful? If I am, that is not fruit of the Spirit.
They're fruit of something.
They absolutely are. That, for me, is one of those things I can look at, I can think through, and say, okay, am I feeling love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control? Are those things being exhibited in me? That, for me, is a good litmus
test. Yeah, it is. It's certainly the filter we should be putting everything that comes into us through. Mm-hmm. Do we really want to be at peace with God, to be at the center of His heart, His will? Well, if so, we're going to actually ask those kind of questions. What about this thing is falling into the place where God would have us encounter Him? Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't mean that everything that is negative that comes at us is therefore of the devil.
Yeah.
We could be facing a real danger in front of us, and it's not peaceful. It could be very agitating. But there are other fruit of the Spirit that help us understand that there's a way out of the situation, and I should do this, not that. There's discernment to be had exactly. in situations where the Spirit is actually working with us. I will also lead you to a place where it's okay to stand up against something, but this is not that time. This is the time to run.
Right.
Other times we're told, stand up. It's going to be dangerous. You're going to take some blows, but this goes to the heart of what it means to be joyful and centered on that which is eternal. And sometimes you will take those hits. You will stand up. You will fight the fight correctly and not out of your own strength. You'll be fighting in and through him. The scripture I like to focus on as we pivot here, it is Psalm 34, verse 8. And it uses a very strange turn of phrase that we don't even really think about how oxymoronic it seems. It simply says, taste and see that the Lord is good. That's the first part of that verse. Think about this. If I go someplace and I have no idea where I am, but I taste something that is suddenly soothing and familiar, a flavor from my past, a flavor from my youth, does that not change what I'm thinking about suddenly? I think it'd be putting us into a place where we are preoccupied with the thing that has centered us when we were young. The taste of ice cream, maybe, or grandma's apple pie, or something that just touches us. We taste it and say, oh, I get it. This is good. Well, where I am right now may be good, too. I may not be a threat. Let's start from there. Our perspective can shift so fast when we taste something physically. Is there not something about tasting what is good in God, letting him touch another sense of ours, something in our soul, that enables us to quickly change frame of reference?
I think
it's possible.
Yeah, I love the thought of that. Just asking God, I'm troubled in my spirit. I'm feeling anxious. Can you touch another sense in me that's going to remind me of your goodness? The taste or the visual or something that I hear that's going to remind me of the goodness of God. I love in the message, it says, open your mouth and taste. Open your eyes and see. How good God is. I love that because it's just like an imperative. Do this. Open your eyes. Taste something. See something.
And back to the perspective thing. The article we're referencing here is about a skewed perception of information that was correct all along. This man's eyes were seeing the faces of his friends, but something had gone wrong in the mind so that when that information, that data hit that part of the brain just went spaghetti and started reconstructing that person's face in ways that were not real. But they are perceived as real. It's a total hallucination of that person's face. They can't but help that fact they're seeing, they're perceiving that person as something that is grotesque.
Yeah.
So what's their path out of that? Well, their path is by faith, literally, trusting that someone can help retrain their perceptions and get around the block, reconstruct the truth from the elements that are right in front of us and try to find a way out. They did discover that there are certain wavelengths of light that are playing into it. For some people, it's orange or it's green or something is off. So when that color is strong, the distortions are strongest. So they give them sunglasses that have that filter in them to take out that particular wavelength or lower it considerably until the mind can finally snap back and perceive what's in front of them as realistic. Realistic meaning what's actually there. That to me is a fascinating answer to the problem. Discovering that there was a part of this thing which was just off enough to trip everything else up. What a fascinating discovery. And on the spiritual level, what is it like when you've got everything right in your mind? You have great people around you. You've been raised in a way that God is God and you are not. And he wants you and he wants to love you into his kingdom. But something gets skewed. You come up with a very harsh family that has convinced you that God is always angry with you or something. That one thing that is just the sauce that makes the thing go sour. You know, do we not face that possibility in our lifetimes that there could be something off just enough in the way we experience or know God, have perceived God, that we really get it wrong in this moment, or we get it wrong about what he actually feels, thinks, knows, and intends for us? Is it possible that we could have something askew in our thinking, in our perceptions, that really make it awful when it ought to be glorious?
I suppose anything is possible in that sense. That just reminds me that I have to be diligent in seeking the Lord and asking him what he wants me to know.
Yeah.
Holy Spirit, teach me. by your wisdom. It's easy when you get a perspective shift to go down a rabbit hole. We've had a conversation about my anxiety and how there are times when my anxiety gets the better of me and I start to feel myself pulled down. Nothing has happened that's triggered it, really. Nothing big has happened, maybe, you know, a thousand little things, but it's a perspective shift. You said to me when I told you I was feeling very anxious, let's go for a walk. And that was the thing that really brought me up. Just change of scenery, change of perspective, it helped. The truth was, and is, I really am okay. Things really are fine. And I needed my perspective on those things to shift.
And with God, He's okay with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. The second part of that verse that we started with here, taste and see that the Lord is good. The second half is really interesting. Blessed is the one who takes refuge in Him. These are not separate thoughts. They're part of the same thing. How does this link? We just talked about tasting and seeing, perceiving that God is great and wonderful. And blessed is the one who takes refuge in Him. I think about running to a tower and hiding in it, like I'm under attack. Well, yeah, there are a lot of attacks out there. But think again about this article we've highlighted here. This man's condition is something that's happening inside his mind. It's a distortion. With the right help, he was corrected in his mind so he could see better. He could perceive better. He had been covered, trained in a way that changed his perspective from the inside out. And the other thought that came to mind was simply Paul saying, put on the full armor of God. And the thing he mentions for the head was the helmet of salvation. What is a helmet there for? But for keeping your head from getting knocks or being chopped off, for that matter. It protects the mind. So why would salvation protect the mind? Well, if God says, this is how I'm saving you, this is who you are to me, this is who I am to you, and this is how we're going to do this together, and that truth surrounds our minds, is there not something about that that can transform what's going on inside that mind? When you are certain that the next hit coming is something that God Himself is protecting you from, that you're not going to be rattled just because someone said something out there that disturbs you, God said, I've already got you. I've already surrounded your mind with mine. So if we're going to take refuge in Him, is it not something that we would most likely have to do inside our own heart and mind? Not just that we go to a place or a church and sit on a pew and pray, but that wherever we find ourselves, we retreat, if we must, into Christ and say, God, I need to be in you right now. I need you to be around me. I invite you to exemplify and to construct your salvation around my mind right now because my mind needs it so bad. Can we not ask for Him to come do that? Can we not reach for that helmet and pull it down over our head and say, okay, my mind's okay, what's next? And then start suiting up the rest of your armor. But the helmet of salvation, I think, is something that is right there in this verse. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Get your perspective different. Blessed is the one who takes refuge in Him. What He thinks, the mind, the heart of Christ, that to me is the place of refuge here.
Paul often talks about renewing our minds, taking our thoughts captive. The whole, like you said, the armor of God, the helmet of salvation, and getting our perspective in right order, getting the truth embedded into our soul, into our mind.
Hammered in the way that doesn't destroy it, embeds it firmly.
Yeah.
We're going to take hits in this life. How much better to have those hits come through and be received by and be deflected or absorbed by the armor that God's already given us. And armor, in this case, is really Him. It's not somebody that stands apart from God. His salvation is Him. It's Jesus. So I want to be in that refuge, especially at times when my mind is under attack or seems that way, or when I have a hard time perceiving things the way I know I want to, but my heart seems to be pulling me a whole different direction than when I think about this thing or when I'm in this place or when I'm with these people. When I see monsters everywhere, when Jesus sees people like me, am I able to step into Him so I can take on the mind of Christ and He can think along with me through this thing, work it out? Can He work with me from the inside out to see correctly, to perceive correctly? Well, I think the promises are right here. We need to take advantage of it.
Yeah. You said something to the effect of, I see monsters when Christ sees His image in those that He's created, His creation. And I want that to be my heart, to see the Imago Dei. I want to see God's image in those around me and not enemies. this is a good reminder that my perspective is not the only perspective out there. There is another perspective. And if I yield my heart and my mind to the transforming power of Jesus Christ, the perspective can shift.
That's a prayer for you, friends, and that's why we put these programs up. If you'd like to learn more about the story, a link to that article is right there on our podcast page of our website, CompassionRadio.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you Monday for the next Compassion Radio Chasing the Word.
Whether getting Bibles into closed countries, relief supplies into dangerous refugee camps, or providing training and theology books to barefoot pastors as they begin their ministry, these are all the kind of things that we love to share with you every day. And more importantly, they're the kind of things we like to do.
So call us today at 1-800-868-2478.
And note our new mailing address, which is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. Again, that's Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877.
Or give online at CompassionRadio.com.
We need you, friend, so contact us today.